Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. With us this week is Fred Cole, President of UUP, United University Professions. UUP is the nation's largest higher education union, with more than 42,000 academic and professional faculty and retirees. UUP members work at 29 New York State-operated campuses, including SUNY's public teaching hospitals and health science centers in Brooklyn, Long Island, and Syracuse. UUP is an affiliate of NYSUT, N-Y-S-U-T, the American Federation of Teachers, the National Education Association, and the AFL-CIO. Welcome back, Fred. It's always great to have you here because you can give us a look into the world of higher education. And I guess the first question with a question mark, one word would be COVID.
Excellent place to start. And first, Happy New Year. It's great to be back on with you, Alan. And I would add to that happy and hopeful New Year, especially when it pertains to COVID. We obviously have been involved in rearranging our work first and foremost when so much of the instruction and student services had to go online back in March. And then at the same time, we had our members working in hospitals, especially at Downstate in Brooklyn and Stony Brook. In Downstate, they were a COVID-only hospital. And so as such, these are folks who were on the front lines. And the work that we were involved with was trying to keep our people safe, literally, to the extent where the union had to go out and purchase PPE, personal protective equipment, because people did not have what they needed in those early weeks of the pandemic, which is just, you know, indicative of how poorly we were prepared as a nation and as a state for this. And then the fall semester, we worked with SUNY. Unfortunately, our recommendations were not taken and put into place. And because of that, there were outbreaks at Oneonta and a couple other campuses. But fortunately, with the arrival of Chancellor Malatras, he and I have worked together very closely. We did through the fall, and now as the spring semester is about to begin. And they have undertaken a very aggressive testing approach, which we have argued for going back to last summer. And the next step is to get our people vaccinated. But of course, that's a challenge that the whole state and nation faces because of the lack of supply is really the issue. But students are coming back and they're going to face a very rigid testing protocol, weekly testing for everyone on campus. And that's a good thing. We can catch the infections should they occur. And hopefully we will avoid outbreaks.
Let's pick up on your mention of Chancellor Malatras. You know, the union and the leadership of the university aren't always on the same page. You say you work closely with him, but there clearly will be times that there are differences. So what kind of grade would you give him and why?
Right now, I would give him an A-. I think that he has done a very good job at coming in and especially in dealing with the health and safety issues through the fall semester and into, as I said, the beginning of this new semester. The other thing that I would grade him highly on is his willingness to work with all of the constituent groups, students and the unions that represent the faculty and staff and the other personnel on campus. I am also pleased that he is cognizant of the challenges facing those SUNY teaching hospitals that have been underfunded for so very long. Now, the next challenge, and that's why, you know, I was always a tough grader when I was
teaching load. Yeah.
You can always do better. But I also think that the real test is going to come over the next couple months as we try to hammer out a budget that gets the resources needed to SUNY to get through this crisis, but also to build back from the cuts that we have faced over the last 10 years. And, you know, so much is riding on that. And I am hopeful that we in UUP will have a partner in the leadership of SUNY and in the chancellor in advocating for funding for SUNY and so that we can be a stronger university system for all New Yorkers and, in fact, for the nation.
So we get Chancellor Malatras via Andrew Cuomo, and he comes from, you know, basically a political background which is known to Cuomo. So let me ask you this. Is it a good idea to have chancellors who used to be gray-bearded guys with horn-rimmed glasses or wire glasses as the necessary people, or is it much better to have somebody who's politically connected?
That's a great question, you know, and I think there's an argument to be made for both approaches. You get a strong chancellor who has a very strong background in research and in teaching and scholarship. I think there's an advantage to that. But I think when you're dealing with the SUNY system, I think an individual like that, that you've described and I've described, is very appropriate as a president of a university or one of the colleges within SUNY. I've come to the perspective that in terms of the leadership of this system, which is more of a massive bureaucracy than anything else, that is a public institution, needs someone who knows the ropes in Albany, where, of course, as you know, the politics is blood sport. At the same time, I think what becomes important, and I know that SUNY is going to be conducting a search for the SUNY provost. Now, that is where it is imperative that there be an individual who has the kind of background in scholarship and research and education, obviously at the preeminent levels of higher education. That's what we would need in SUNY as a provost. And then hopefully there's a strong partnership with Chancellor Malatras so that we can then get all aspects of the SUNY mission accomplished.
Now, Fred Gohl, many people do not know what the provost is. It's a foreign term to a lot of people. So why don't you explain it? Sort of the chief academic officer, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And so in that regard, that individual is the one who will work with the campuses and the leadership at the campuses in determining and in carrying out the academic mission of SUNY, which, of course, is so diverse based on what campus you're looking at. And in SUNY's case, it's 64 campuses. We represent 29 of the campuses and also the folks at the system administration. But then you have all the community colleges that are a part of SUNY. And so the provost, yes, is the chief academic officer, is the one who, in essence, works with the campuses to ensure that their academic mission of educating our students is done in the best way possible. And also, I like to look at it, and this is something where, you know, perhaps seems a little bit out of the ordinary, defends the academic integrity of the university system. And that can involve issues, for instance, on delivering education in the best way possible. There's a lot of interest in online education, and it's of a necessity now, but there's a lot of movement in that direction. We don't oppose it as a union, but we just want to make sure that the quality of the education is at the highest level, because sometimes online education, especially by these profit-making firms, is not about quality, it's about making money. And we have to make sure SUNY's online programs are of the highest quality. I think the chancellor is committed to that, but you know, we want to make sure that that's the case.
So let's continue on with this idea, the recruitment not of a provost, but of the individual college presidents. Obviously, there are people who would like to be a college president, but who aren't emblematic of real scholarship and research, but they want to retire and do it that way. Are you able to play any role in that at all?
It varies from campus to campus. There are some campuses where they will want the unions involved in the search process. When I spent my years at SUNY Cobleskill, there were times when the candidates met with representatives from all of the unions. There were other times when we were not included. But we don't have to be. It's not required. I've always made the argument that if you have candidates for a presidency at a campus, you are going to get a better candidate if in making the ultimate determination of who to hire, you get feedback from all different sectors, including the unions. See, the problem that we're running into, Alan, is that with the assault on unions across the country, it is becoming more and more difficult to find candidates for these jobs who have had experience in working in a collective bargaining situation and know about, you know, the requirements of living by a contract. That can be a challenge. And sometimes campus presidents come in and there has to be an educational process, if you know what I mean. But that's one of the realities that we're dealing with. And so it's best during the search to include the unions to get their perspective on the campus and what's needed.
Well, now, as the chief of the union statewide, certainly there must be times. I know this is going to be a tough question, and I apologize for it, but it's important. There are going to be times when a union leader at a particular campus comes to you with a personal gripe about a college president or somebody didn't get tenure or comes up with an idea that could just seem strange. Do you ever have to counsel with them and say, this is not a good idea to do this now?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think... you know, I've been president of UUP for about 7.5 years now. And
wow. Time does go.
Yeah, and time flies when you're having a lot of fun. So no, I think there are certainly circumstances where, as, you know, sprawling as we are as a union across the state, and in all of these different campuses, campuses are, you know this from your life experiences, the campuses are very different culturally. And so what might be an issue at one campus is not an issue at somewhere else. My approach to things is when an individual comes to me with a problem at their particular campus, the questions I always lead with is, you know, is this a general issue or is a specific case? If it's a specific case, we have staff who can work with them to make sure their rights are protected. The second question is, is it, and I'll reach out to all of our representatives at all campuses, is this a general issue that I need to take to the chancellor? That's because I think that if it's a general issue, then it needs to be dealt with through system administration and my communications with the chancellor. If it's at the campus level and it's very much an individual case, well, we have, you know, we have our legal staff to work with that circumstance. If it's a problem with, for instance, an administration that is has a pattern that is abhorrent, we haven't had a situation like that, but a really severe issue, then, you know, I'm going to go to the chancellor and say, you know, you've got a problem at, you know, fill in the blank campus, and you got to do something about it because you're going to have a lot of problems there. So that's how I would approach those circumstances.
Okay, so New York is in desperate shape when it comes to money. The governor has been calling out to the Biden administration to give more, to get more for it. He's gotten apparently some relief, but my question to you is, how did SUNY do in the budget stakes?
Well, in the last stimulus act that was passed, you know, late in the year, or late in the last year, actually, you know, it didn't contain nearly as much money as was necessary for higher education. But the money that was there, thanks to Chuck Schumer, who did really great work in getting New York the funding. And, you know, SUNY did get, you know, money that will assist some of the campuses in dealing with the worst of the present financial crisis. Because all campuses are, you know, they're suffering from the fact that enrollment is down because students don't necessarily want to take courses online. At the same time, you know, the state has withheld through the course of the year 20% of funding for all agencies. SUNY is no different than others, or local governments and local school districts. So there has been that, you know, that severe belt tightening. And in doing so, any assistance that can be gotten from the federal government is good. And so there was some. And as the now majority leader has said, Senator Schumer, they're trying to get this big Biden stimulus plan, and that would contain upwards of $45 billion for higher education, most of it for public education. And that would mean real help for New York. Our one concern about that is that if federal money comes in, we don't want that to be an excuse to reduce state funding. And you know how that can work. The fact is, we need resources from all sides, from the federal government and from the state, so that SUNY can grow and become a 21st century world-class institution.
Which leads us to yet another question, and that is that New York State is famous for having a lot of universities. You have the State University of New York, the City University of New York City, private colleges, otherwise known, they'd like to be called independent colleges. And we do know that at least a few dire warnings have come to some of those private or independent universities in terms of their survival. Now, you're the head of the union at SUNY, but do you think that some of these warnings to the private colleges portend bad things for New Yorkers?
Well, I think so. And obviously, it's best when prospective students have a wide variety of choices between the independent colleges, SUNY, where I'm certainly biased. I think, you know, a SUNY education is the best education one can get.
Better than Harvard? Better than Yale? Better than Princeton?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think our faculty and staff work so very hard at getting the best education for our students. I think it's a different education. I think the experience is different. And I'm biased. I will freely admit that. And I think, having said that, it is an absolute reality that financially, some of the private colleges, a couple of them right in Albany, certainly St. Rose, is going through some very, very tough budgetary times. And I think this was a situation, and the scholarship has shown it, that the situation facing some of the private independent colleges was becoming serious financially prior to COVID. And COVID, as the crisis, has shown the problems to be much worse than they were otherwise. I think that what is necessary is for the state to make the investment in those institutions that serve the public interest best. Does that include continued funding and support for private institutions? I know that the state legislature is going to appropriate funds in that direction. Fine. But what we have to make sure is that SUNY gets the funding it does to make the institution work in medical education, in patient care at the hospitals, in the opportunity for programs that are going to educate and train our young people and what we call non-traditional students who want to go back to school for training, for education, for the training job market, especially as it relates to the climate crisis. Here's where SUNY could take the lead. And that's where I see the strength in SUNY, is if you look at this system, and this gets back to your point about Harvard, if you look at the SUNY system, the choices of the different programs and opportunities are so vast that, yes, I think the opportunity is there for that kind of world-class education, but only if the resources are there. And that's why we're proposing a very ambitious legislative agenda. We think this is the best time in a crisis. I know it sounds counterintuitive, but this is the time to look at major issues facing the state and propose SUNY as the solution to those crises.
Well, Fredko, let me bring that a little bit forward. Do you think this is a time that we should tax the rich at a greater rate in New York so you can have those resources?
Absolutely. I don't think there's an argument to be made, despite what the governor may say, to not tax the wealthy. Due to a number of factors, the wealthiest New Yorkers and Americans in general during COVID have made a windfall. And so I think it is, as Franklin Roosevelt used to say, the wealthy have to pay. It is what they pay for living in a civilized society and a society that has public goods that benefit all. And so I think it's imperative that there be an increase in the rates paid by those who are at the highest income level. They have the capability of paying, and a small increase will generate revenue, and it won't be a huge burden on those who are the wealthiest, but I think it is the fair thing to do. I also think that a proposal that is gaining momentum in the legislature is the end to the rebate of the stock transfer tax, which I think is long overdue.
They move, what if they move? Whoa, what if they move? The governor said to me, right, you know, what if they move to New Jersey? What if they go somewhere else? With electronic stuff now, you can do that very easily. Does New York really want to lose the stock exchange?
Well, first, I don't think the New York Stock Exchange is going to move. Their identity is New York, and London has a stock transfer tax. The FTSE is still in London. They did not move. The Hong Kong Stock Exchange has this. But most importantly, the stock exchange itself does not pay the tax. The tax is paid by those who are making the purchases and the exchanges themselves. The best parallel is if Albany County raises the sales tax by 0.25%, because that's basically what we're talking about, do the stores move out from Albany? I mean, it doesn't impact them. That's the mistake that people are making about the stock transfer tax. It doesn't fall on the New York Stock Exchange. It falls on those who are buying and selling. It's the individuals, wherever they're making the purchase. So think about how the governor always says New York is subsidizing 43 states. Well, if there are people in California and Montana and Florida who are trading on the New York Stock Exchange, we can get some of that money back to New York. Whereas if this, which has been proposed, if it became a federal tax, then we would again be losing money out of the state to go to a federal coffer. So I think that the tax, in part, the idea is gaining momentum because people are realizing this is an important industry in New York. It's a very small tax, but the return, and given the fact that it was in place for decades prior to the late 1970s, early 80s, when it was turned into a rebate system, I think it's overdue. Now, perhaps it needs to be implemented gradually to make sure there's no impact on this important industry in New York, but I think everyone needs to pay. And much like in Texas, they tax the natural gas wells to create a massive foundation and funding source for the University of Texas educational system. That's their big industry. I think that we need to make sure we get a little bit out of our big financial industry for the benefit of all New Yorkers.
Okay, the students are coming back in some places. They're not coming back. It's virtual in other places. What are your teachers thinking about that? And what percentages, I don't know if you have these facts, of teachers are teaching from home?
It varies from campus to campus. I know that in the fall semester, it was roughly 20% or so were teaching in person 100%. And then you had those who are totally online, and then you had a middle ground of people doing a course or two in person and a course or two virtually. And I'm not sure how it's going to play out for the spring semester. I know that at the start of the semester, for the first couple of weeks, everything is going to be online. And then they'll start having in-person classes, which makes sense because they've got to run the tests for COVID a couple of times to make sure you don't get any false negatives. But I'm really concerned, Alan, and the chancellor knows this, and we've been advocating together with the Department of Health and with the governor's people, is that when the governor announced that educators would be included in that category 1B, we wondered who would that be included in that category from amongst higher ed folks. And the answer we eventually got were those who were teaching in person. Now, the reality is in UUP, we've got half of our members who are referred to as professional staff. These are the people who manage the residence halls where students live. These are the folks who work in admissions, in the registrar's office, in financial aid, in counseling services. And they are dealing with students on a day in and day out basis. And unfortunately, up until this point, they still are not included in that 1B category to be vaccinated. And they really need to be. Now, we hope that the testing will serve to protect, but we're still pressuring the governor and the folks there to understand that they really need to be included, facing the reality, though, that the supply of vaccines is just far too low, and there may still be a long wait before they would be vaccinated were they to be included in 1B. But that is a big concern for us right now, as you said, as students start returning.
Fred Cole, what about the idea that public universities like SUNY should make private contacts with different places that are not taxpayer-supported? Is this a good idea?
Well, I think there's always been a mixing of public and private, you know, funding sources and so forth and contracting in that way. One of the biggest areas where it takes place is with the hospitals where hospitals, physicians, and other health providers create clinical practice plans, basically, you know, medical services, right. And that's a massive area of funding and provision of healthcare in New York State, associated with public hospitals and private hospitals. So that's an ongoing reality. I mean, we have a lot of our members at the hospitals who work as those professionals in healthcare, you know, most of the salary that they earn is earned privately through those clinical practice plans as opposed to their state salary. And then we have folks who work partly in the Research Foundation, and then also, which is a private entity, and also on the state side. So there's a lot of that blurring. We just don't want to lose the identity of a public university serving right. the public's interest. You know, that's where the concern arises. But we need to be, you know, we need to adapt to where the resources are and bring them in so that SUNY can grow.
And what about the so-called TAP gap? Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, and this is an issue that, you know, emerged about 7-8 years ago now. And that is that the maximum amount of funding for a tuition assistance program, that's what TAF stands for, the maximum award a student could get was, it's a very complex formula, it falls short of the amount of tuition that a student would pay. And so if I fall into the economic category where I benefit from TAP, and TAP is one, you know, if not the largest state-funded financial assistance program, it's a great program. But because there's literally a ceiling, a cap, as to how high the funding will go to a campus if they have a TAP awardee who's getting the full award, but it is below what the tuition is to attend, say, SUNY Cobleskill. And because of that, the campus doesn't get as much tuition money for those students. That creates a TAP gap. And the campuses that have the highest percentage of students who are full recipients are, not surprisingly, the campuses that are in a worse financial situation right now, because they're eating a loss on so many of these students. And it's campuses like Morrisville, like Buffalo State, like Fredonia, like Potsdam and Plattsburgh. And so what we're advocating for is, let's fix the formula. If you're a full awardee, you get the award to match the tuition. That is to ensure that campuses don't suffer for taking students who otherwise cannot afford to attend college. It achieves the mission of SUNY to build a middle class and move people into the middle class.
As you probably know, I'm a great believer in free college education. We keep moving further and further away from that, yes?
We do, and it's happening, and certainly, you know, the cost of higher education, public or independent, is just, it's skyrocketing, and it's well beyond, it doesn't make any, I'll just put it simply, it doesn't make any sense, given the prices for all other items, being fairly consistent over years because we haven't had inflation. And the other part of it is the fact that tuition, in terms of SUNY, is not high relative to other states. Where students get hammered is with fees. And, you know, right now, some estimates are that 75% of the cost of a SUNY education is, in fact, fees, not tuition. So when we hear, you know, proposals, let's make SUNY or CUNY tuition free, that's missing the point. The point is that the cost is, in fact, on the fee side. And those fees are specifically targeted for certain purposes, whether they're laboratory fees or so forth. So it's a complex issue.
Fred, I'm so sorry. We're out of time. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. With us this week was Fred Cowell, president of UUP, United University Professions. It's a terrific service that you do by coming on and telling everybody what you know. And we so appreciate it, Fred.
Thank you, Alan.